Welcome, everyone, to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this May 5th, 2016. This is Peyman Mutahedeh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School, and your host for this weekly conference. Folks, every Thursday night, I hold this weekly conference calls to answer your freedom questions. Why do I do that? Well, part of it is because I came from Iran, a country where I grew up in the 1960s and 70s and had no freedom. We did not have the freedom of speech to criticize the government. The Shah of Iran was a dictator, a tyrant king, a puppet of United States government and CIA, who was installed in 1953. And you could not criticize his policies or actions. You could not vote him out. And coming to America in 1977, at the age of 14, I thought and believed that I had come to the land of the free and the home of the brave. But surprisingly, I find myself to the land of the meek and the home of the indentured. That's right, folks. I find myself in a country which was not free like it was meant to be and was intended to be. I found America controlled and ruled by the big Wall Street banks and their corporations. The big banks, the biggest ones are Goldman Sachs, Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citi. And these guys make money out of thin air to lend out to everybody, all the corporations, the people, and even the federal government. That's right. It's all money made out of thin air. They own the Federal Reserve, privately owned Federal Reserve system, and the income tax is a part of that scam and fraud. So American people have been reduced to a new type of slavery system, where the big banks and corporations are at the top. And then you got the politicians and corporations, and the rest of us are considered basically not much more than just some serfs. So, folks, it's time to change all that, folks. It's overdue. And it all starts first with education. We have to educate ourselves as to what's going on. How come and how we lost our freedoms, and how we can get it back. And folks, the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence provide us the framework of what we want and need to get back to. And that's why I started Freedom Law School in 1996 at the age of 34 to educate the average ordinary American to know about the constitutional laws and live free. Not to become an attorney, but to learn how to live free. And folks, if you've been looking for a place to tell you the truth about what's going on, about the loss of our rights and freedoms, how come we're having this great depression that started out in 2007, going on for 9 years, and the big banks, the crooks that did it, they got bailed out by the government. But the average man and woman like you ended up holding the bag and paying for the bailout of the big banks and corporations. And it's not getting better. It's gotten worse, as you know it. Folks, you found the source. Freedom Law School is the freedom education and the freedom solution source for you. What I mean by that is, folks, is that I provide the education to you and the answers that work. Because, folks, I love freedom. I love America. I love the American people, folks. I love this country. We've got to get it back to what it was meant to be. And I'm here to help you understand what's going on and provide solutions that work for you. And I believe that the income tax system is a big, giant fraud. I state and I've said it for a long time, for 20 years, over 20 years I've said, that there is no law that requires the average American, like you and me, to file and pay the federal income tax. And guess what, folks? A former IRS special agent with IRS's own criminal investigation division verified what I said. That's right, he verified it and confronted the IRS about it back in 1999 and 2000 once he left the IRS, demanding that they show him and the average American the law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax. His CD will be sent to you at no charge of his speech if you just contact Freedom Law School, along with a free Freedom Education package to you. Go to our website at livefreenow.org. Sign up for our one-year free education. You're going to get some by mail and some of it emailed to you. And folks, tonight I'm going to talk about how myself and this former IRS special agent named Joseph Bannister in June 6th, for that week or two, him and I will be putting the IRS practically on trial. They think they got one of our students on trial, but in practice, we are going to put the government, the IRS, on trial. Why do they ignore the law? Why they ignore the U.S. Constitution? Why the IRS and the federal government, the politicians, do not care about the legality of the income tax? They just want the money. Why? Isn't this country supposed to be a government by the people, of the people, and for the people? Well, folks, before I get to the subject of the class portion of this conference call, because at each conference call I'll be teaching you about some aspect of law and freedom that I hope you'll find of interest to you. But first thing that I do, I'll be answering your questions, your particular freedom questions of you and your life. Whether it's the IRS, a state income tax agency, the police, the bureaucrats, any government agents or agency that may be harassing you, want to take away the law, you know, your rights, your money, your freedom, I am here to help you understand what's going on and what are your options, what you can and should do. And folks, sometimes I can answer your questions fully on this conference call. At other times, you may want or need a private one-on-one consultation with me with your paperwork in my hand so I can give you more exact, precise, you know, answers that are accurate and will work for you for sure. Sometimes one of our courses or freedom packages is what you want or need. And I'll refer you to somebody else if they can better help you too. So I'm here as a freedom source to help you live free now. So let's now go to the people with the questions on this call. We have a caller right now from area code 951 in California. I used to live in Southern California, folks. So let's go to the caller from area code 951. If you have a question, my friend, give me your first name only for your privacy. Only give me your first name, folks.
First name is Alan, and the reason I'm just listening in tonight.
Very good, Alan. Thank you for being on the call listening. Let's go to another caller that we have tonight. And this caller is calling from Northern California, from Sacramento area. All right, the gentleman from area code 916. If you have a question, please give me your first name. You have no questions? Okay. Very good, folks. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes,
go
I can
ahead.
Hear you. I was having a...
What's your name?
First of all, my name is Matt.
Hello, Matt. Welcome to Freedom Law School's Conference Call.
Thank you. Good to be here. I'm having a problem with my phone here. Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Very good from the get-go, my friend. Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, what my situation is, I have been a non-collectible for a number of years, and I recently had sort of a spike in income, and so so the IRS sent me a series of collection letters for the particular years that that they say that I owe them for. And so the amount of money that that they're claiming is about, it's in the range of 50K. So I wanted to see. I've already spoken to a number of different tax resolution firms, and for the most part, they are all talking about either installment agreements or an offer in compromise. And so I wanted to see what your organization may do about that.
Well, Matt, thank you for calling the conference call. I remember we spoke a few days ago, and thank you for inviting my invitation to call the conference call so I can help you more accurately. I hope you have the paperwork that you have in your case in front of you because I can give you more accurate answers with that, which is why I suggested, and you still may need a private one-on-one consultation likely to give you more exact answers. But let me tell you, and also, by the way, when I do these conference calls every week, and I'm happy to answer your freedom questions for free, I do it not only for the person who I am trying to help on the call, but also for everybody else who may be listening to this conference call live or the recorded version of it later. It's an educational, class for other people as well to learn from. So, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong in your situation. I remember that you said that for year 2004 to 2008, IRS claimed that you owed them about $50,000. But as you said, they had you as non-collectible. Basically, you had very low income or no job, unemployment. Doesn't matter what exact reason it was, but generally that's what it is. You have either no income or very little income. That you can barely survive, make a living, so they list you as non-collectible. You have nothing to take, and they have to leave you so much to pay for your food and gas and rent and other necessities of life. So you mentioned to me that you're a truck driver, that in 2015, all of a sudden looks like you got a decent job, and you made about $50,000. And once you file the tax return for 2015, which was obviously recently, in the last few months, the IRS has contacted you. And now they're saying that, hey, we are taking you out of the non-collectible status because now looks like you do have a job. You have some money that Matt has a source of income to pay the IRS up $50,000 or so that the IRS claims that you owe them. Am I correct so far, Matt?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
What part am I not accurate? Please correct me in whatever I was not accurate.
Well, I've always been employed. It's just that for the most part, my personal expenses I'm pretty much for the most part broke even as far as handling personal expenses compared to what I make. And as a result of that, the IRS left me alone for a period of time. So it wasn't that I'm unemployed. I've always been employed. It's just because of some things that happened in 2015 on my job, it caused my gross income on my job to go up.
How
That's what
much? I
IRS.
mean, you mentioned that to me. You said you had a spike in your income. How much did you make in 2000, 11, 12, 13, 14, before?
Well, let's put it this way. I think for 2014, I think my gross income was like 47 or something like that, 47,000 or something like that. And then for 2015, my gross went up to I'm going to say I think it was 62. So I had a $15,000 increase in income for 2015, and it's basically because we were working a really really large amount of overtime on top of a particular bonus that I received for some things that happened in the company, and so those two things together caused my income for 2015 to go up.
Okay. Got it. How about 2012 and 13? How much did you make in those years?
Like I was saying, I don't have those returns sitting in front of me, but essentially the same thing happened. I want to say in 2012, I had another increase in income. But then what they did is they asked me to send them the form 433F, which is basically a handwritten financial analysis. And then when I sent it back to them, they realized, you know, that I'd still be breaking even every month. So they allowed my account to go back into non-collectible.
2012, how much did you make when they reaffirmed you being in a non-collectible status?
I think probably I don't have it sitting in front of me, but I think it was in the range of it was somewhere between 50 and 55,000 for that year.
So about the same as 2014 and 15, 14 and 13, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were maybe in high 40s, basically in all 3 years. Okay. All right. So, and you are single. Do you have any children?
No.
And how old are you?
Between 45 and 50.
All right. So basically, you had about a $15,000 spike in income from what you had made in 12, 13, and 14 in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So even though previously with $47,000 as a single man, you live in Sacramento area. I see area code 916 you're calling from, correct?
Yes.
Sacramento, California. They regarded that as you don't have enough, but once you get to $62,000 in year 2015, the extra $15,000 or about, you know, $1,200 extra a month basically that you had, then the IRS felt, hey, that gives that extra, you know, $1,200 a month is enough for you to be able to make some kind of payment to them and send a letter demanding payment, correct?
Right.
Okay. And so now one thing I'd like to ask of you is the $50,000 that you owe. Can you give me approximate? First of all, did you file for those years, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or was it the IRS come after you on their own?
I'm sorry. Could you ask that question again, please?
Sure. Did you file 1040 income tax confession forms for years 04 through years 08?
Yes. Yes, I'm completely.
Okay.
As far as filing is concerned, I'm completely up to date. So
okay.
there are no unfiled years.
Okay. Well, for year 2004, then you should owe the IRS nothing because the return or the 1040 income tax confession form for that was due by April 15, 2005. IRS has 10 years to collect. They can extend that, but they usually do not do that. And in your case, from what you're telling me, it looks like they have not done so, or maybe they did. I don't know, but probably not.
Okay, well, what I was about to say, as far as that goes, I filed those years, if I'm not mistaken, either late 2009 or early 2010 is when I filed those years. So.
Oh, you filed them late?
Okay. Yeah.
Late 2009?
Yeah, either late 2009 or early 2010.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Okay, thank you. That makes a difference. So that's why they're still after you.
Yeah, because as I understand the statute, I could be wrong about this, but as I understand, the statute of limitations begins when a person files, and so
when the tax is assessed, when the IRS comes after you, assesses or fixes, it determines the amount of tax, or you do it yourself. So in this case, you did it yourself, back in late 2009 or early 2010. So approximately, it's been about 6.5 years. So the IRS has another 3.5 years to collect, basically.
Right.
Okay, all right. And you filed every year since then?
Yes.
Okay. So your situation is this. Let me get a, you know, basic calculator to give you a more rough number. So 62,000 minus 47,000 is 15,000, which divided by 12 months is about 1,250 a month. The IRS says, hey, you make 1,250 a month. Now, let's suppose of this extra that you make, 250 a month that goes for the taxes on what you made. The IRS says, well, you still make over $1,000 extra a month. And they say, their attitude is, give us $1,000 extra a month. That comes out to $12,000 a year. $12,000 a year times 3 years, $36,000. $36,000 plus $6,000 for another half a year is $42,000. So this $42,000 will not get paid the whole $50,000, which grows, by the way, with interest. But it'll make a substantial dent into it, obviously. That's what they're looking at. And that's their attitude. And that's going to be their answer to you. An offer and compromise that everybody talks about, they're saying that you offer the IRS that, well, instead of $50,000, let's suppose that you accept $10,000. Okay? And what you have to do is to give the IRS 10% of the offer of $10,000 for, in this example, and make the offer to the IRS. I'm going to beg, borrow from friends, family members, whatever, you steal from my neighbor, you know, whatever it takes to give them your offer. The IRS will consider your offer, and they will not take anything from you while your offer is being considered. If they say no to you, they get to keep the $1,000, and it will not apply to your taxes either. It just, I think it does. I'm not sure. It may. But they just tell you no. But if they take your $10,000 offer, then they'll take that. You have to come up with the $10,000. That is separate from the $1,000, the 10% you pay them. You have to pay the offer on top of that. And you have to file and pay fully and on time for 5 years. So in other words, okay, in this case, if you paid the IRS $10,000, the other $40,000 is wiped away. Hey, that's good. That's the good news. But if for some reason, in the next 5 years, you don't file or pay fully on time, at any time IRS can say, sorry, Matt, that offer is now revoked. You owe us that $40,000 that you had not paid, that we forgave. It's reinstated, plus interest. So your $40,000 that you have left would become $42,000, $45,000, whatever that may be at the time that happened. And that's what. And I hope you called a lot of people. How many people did you call to tell you that basically, essentially that's their plan for you?
It's a lot of people. It's probably 30 or 40 different tax resolution firms.
That's all they all told you. And I believe when you called me, you told me I'm the second or third person that you had called. And I told you from the get-go that there is another solution for you that these so-called tax practitioners that you call do not know. Let me ask you. You called CPAs, enrolled agents, accountants. Did you call any tax attorneys? Hello, Matt, are you there? I cannot hear you, my friend. Your cell phone got a little problem. Your phone had a little challenge there. Hello? Hello, okay. Matt got disconnected, folks, from the call. That's what happened. That's why he's not there. So we're just going to give him a minute to reconnect to the conference call so that I can answer his question. He was just getting to the good part, by the way, folks. His question, because there is a very good solution for Matt that, as you see, he said, 30 people at least he called, and they all want to do this offer and compromise that I mentioned to you. That's what all they can do. You know, make it sound like a very good deal, even though it's not a good deal. There's a better way. Well, folks, I'm going to go ahead and give the answer for Matt because he's not on the call. And I'm hopeful that if he doesn't join the call soon, he can listen to the recording of the call and get his answer that way. Although I cannot interact with him, hopefully he'll get the answer. Basically, what you need to do, Matt, the only the best option for you, in my opinion, is just nuke this whole tax bill. Nuclear bomb it. H-bomb it. Hydrogen bomb. How you do it? You bankrupt the taxes. And the bankrupting of taxes will wipe this entire $50,000 away permanently. There is no coming back. IRS cannot, with any kind of an excuse, come later on and reinstate any of the $50,000. It will be all wiped off. Now, you might be asking yourself, how come no one else offered Matt, this is a possible suggestion? Well, that's because to bankrupt taxes, you have to know bankruptcy law. And of course, bankruptcy attorneys know bankruptcy law, which is a specialty field of law. Just like you have in medicine, you have brain doctors, heart doctors, female doctors, cancer doctors, bone doctors. There are various specialties in the field of medicine. So is in the field of law. You have lawyers that specialize in patents or real estate or criminal law or immigration law, or all kind of different fields of law. Bankruptcy is one of those specialty areas of law. And bankrupting most other debts is pretty simple and straightforward. You just file Chapter 7 bankruptcy in the bankruptcy court, and all your debts to credit cards and department stores and utility bills and other debts and bills that you have are automatically wiped away. But when it comes to taxes, you can bankrupt taxes completely, but you have to actually sue the IRS or the state income tax agency, or both, if in case they're both after you. Drag them into the federal bankruptcy court and then wipe off the taxes. So you have to know bankruptcy law, you have to know tax law, and you have to know civil litigation. Litigation, that means suing, because bankruptcy lawyers don't do suing people, most of them. Okay, so it's a triple agent specialty: tax law, civil litigation, and bankruptcy law. So, as you can imagine, how often you have a doctor who is a brain and a heart doctor and maybe a bone doctor too. Triple specialty, 2-3 specialties. Not very often. Most doctors, just like most lawyers, specialize in one area and maybe dabble in a second area. And who knows if that second area is the one you need. Okay? Maybe a bankruptcy lawyer also does know some real estate. Or some ambulance chasing, car accidents, but not taxes. You have that. But to have the particular combination, specific combination of bankruptcy and tax law is very uncommon. In fact, I've heard people call me in the past and say that the lawyer tells them that you cannot bankrupt taxes. And I tell them, well, they say that because they don't know what they're talking about. They have not researched the issue. They don't understand it. So they're giving you bad information. Folks, look this stuff up for yourself. I'm not making it up. It's all for you to decide for yourself. So, as I was telling Matt, that would be the best way for you to go, is just bankrupt the taxes in bankruptcy court, and you just go on with the rest of your life normal. There's no more requirement that you have to file and or pay on time to the IRS. If you want to do that, you can. If you don't, you don't. It will not affect in any way the $50,000 that you wiped away in bankruptcy, Matt. So I hope that's helpful to you, Matt. You probably, as I suggested before, you may want to send me your paperwork and do a private one-on-one consultation. I can go over the things a little bit more specifically about it. And the bankruptcy process, once you file it, by the way, IRS cannot take anything from you. So the bankruptcy itself will stop the IRS from even attempting to take anything from you. And it might take, you know, anywhere from, you know, depending, 6 to 12 months typically to have these taxes be declared null and void and discharged by the bankruptcy court. That's generally the time frame that it takes for that to happen. So with that, my friend, I'm glad you called, Matt, and I look forward to speaking to you again very soon. Let's now go to the subject of this conference call, folks, that I, on email, I let you guys know on our Facebook as well. And that is that the IRS and the government will be on trial June 6, 2016 in Oakland Federal District Court in California. And how is that going to happen, folks? Well, a gentleman who was a student of mine back in 2003 is going to be on trial. They've charged him with tax evasion. And a key part of the tax evasion that they claim that Mr. Rick Grant did, Richard Grant, was not having filed and paid income taxes, you know, for years 2005 to 2009. Well, guess what, folks? Richard Grant had done his homework before those years. He wrote to his two senators, and Dianne Feinstein, they call her, but I call her Frankenstein because that's how I see her, and Barbara Boxer and her and his congressman, and ask him some very simple questions. It's like, where is the law that requires Richard Grant, Mr. Average American, to file and pay income tax? And in support of that, his belief that Mr. Grant or the average American like you is not required to file and pay income tax, Mr. Grant sent the report of the former IRS special agent, the book of Mr. Joe Bannister, to his congressmen and senators, as well as the speech of Joe Bannister about how he came to these conclusions and how the IRS would never want to discuss and answer these questions to him when he was a criminal investigator with the IRS, as well as the nationally televised debate that was to take place between Joe Bannister and other experts of the tax honesty movement and the IRS and the U.S. government. That video shown on C-SPAN 2. He sent that also. I sent it for him, by the way, to his congressmen and senators, as well as some full-page ads in USA Today that We the People Foundation, who sponsored these debates, several of these were scheduled, they were sent to his congressmen and senators and asking them, is Mr. Joe Bannister, this former IRS criminal investigator, wrong? If so, how? He took an oath to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution, and that's why he left the IRS. Because, you know, he concluded that the whole income tax system is a giant fraud. And you guys never answered him when he was a gun-carrying IRS special agent. Nor did you answer him after he left. You always evade the opportunity to come and show him to be wrong. And I want to find out for myself. Is Joe Bannister wrong? Is the, you know, U.S. government right? Is there a law that requires me, the average American, to follow and pay the federal income tax? And you think they did that? Nope. They didn't do that. None of the lawmakers, the ones that make the law, could or would answer Mr. Grant and show him the law that requires the average American like you and me to file and pay the federal income tax. Hey, there's a law for everything, folks. There are laws in there for not stealing, for not murdering, law relating to immigration, to patents, to railroads, you know, to the Navy. There's laws about everything. There's voluminous, long laws out there that's written by the legislature. So if there is a law that requires the average American to file and pay the federal income tax, it should be easily shown. Very easily shown by the people that make the law, the people in the legislative branch of the government, the branch of the government that makes and writes the laws. And I'll be testifying about this issue in court myself, along with Mr. Richard Grant, that I send these materials for him to the government for answers. And, you know, he had also met and heard Joe Bannister spoke with him, income tax issue, and Mr. Grant will speak about that also. And Mr. Joe Bannister also will be speaking and testifying at the trial. Folks, this is going to be a trial that will be talked about for many years. This is going to be a trial that will be written about in newspapers. Mark my words. Okay, this is not going to be no ordinary trial. Freedom Law School, along with Joe Bannister, along with Mr. Grant, will in practice put the government on trial. Why don't they simply refute the findings, the legal conclusions, the research of one of their own gun-carrying special agents with IRS's own criminal investigation division, a man who was in charge of putting people in jail, in prison for taxes, who did so? Four different business people he had put in jail. That's his job. How come they don't show him the law that he is supposed to enforce? The government gave him a gun as part of his duties to enforce the tax laws of a country at the point of a gun if needed. And he had, you know, that searches of people's homes where the IRS shows up to people's homes with guns drawn. How come they won't show him the law he's supposed to be enforcing with the gun? Do you think it's right, folks, for the government to enforce laws on us that don't exist just because people think, oh, it's a good idea? It's a good idea to do this, but there's no law for it. Oh, well, we should just go on and do it anyhow. That would bring this country to a lawlessness that third world dictatorships suffer from. But the government officials are practically God. They can and do whatever they think feel, or believe is right. In those third world countries like Iran, where I grew up in the 1960s and 70s, the law was the government, the Shah of Iran. Whatever him and his agents wanted to do and said was the law. In America, we are supposed to have a different kind of a government. A government by, of, and for we the people. By the people, the government of the people, and the government for the people. The government that answers to us, talks to us, is part of us. Out of control government that don't care about the people. They only care about the big banks and corporations that pay for their re-election advertising campaigns. So this is going to be an exciting trial. I believe the courtroom will be filled. So let me tell you, it's going to be June 6th starting. It's going to go for probably 2 weeks. Monday, June 6th. And it's going to go for 2 weeks except for Wednesdays. There'll be no trial. It might take less than that. It might take a week or a week and a half. And it's going to be at the Federal District Court in Oakland, California at 1301 Clay Street, C-L-A-Y, Clay Street, in court in a third floor courtroom 3. In the courtroom of the chief judge, the head judge of the Oakland District Court, Judge Phyllis J. Hamilton. So, folks, I will be there the entire trial. Joe Bannister will be at this trial also testifying. You'll get to meet him and talk to him. If you've been wanting to meet and talk with Joe Bannister, folks, he's a very busy guy, hard to reach. This is going to be your one opportunity to meet him in person and talk with him in person about things. You should do it. He's going to be there. I'll be there. And I look forward to meeting you and talking to you about these issues, talking about the State of the Union in America, and getting our rights and freedoms back. And while I'm at it, folks, I want to congratulate Mr. Donald Trump on having practically won the Republican primary and become practically the nominee of the Republican Party for the 2016 presidential campaign. The American people, folks, after experiencing 9 years of Great Depression. The Great Depression that started under Republican George Bush, the dumb president. They fell for the lie of Obama called the change you can believe in. Remember that was the mantra of Obama, change you can believe in. And there was a change, all right. That's right. The change was practically, basically a face change. We have, instead of a dumb George Bush, we got a smarter, a good speaker, good orator, black Obama. Other than that, very little bit was changed. The major accomplishment of Obama was continuing the same war policies that Bush did. Continuing to take away Americans' rights and freedoms like Bush did. Continue the bailout of the big banks and corporations. Chase Bank got bailed out, folks. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs. Obama supported bailout out of these crooks, just like his competitor, Senator John McCain, right? So it was a face change, and people realized they were suckered. We were snookered by this crooked Obama. And now we got the crooked criminal Hillary. Looks like it's going to be most likely the Democratic nominee. Although, I should say Bernie Sanders is providing a very good run to Hillary. We call her, I like to call her Killery for short, because she killed a lot of people with her husband Bill while they were, you know, he was governor of Arkansas. They have a record of doing that then, and also in White House. So, but American people, folks, the Republicans were smart enough to see that all the 60 other politicians running on the stage were not independent like Trump was. Now, I got to make an exception to Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, who I fully supported. I believe he was the real change, the bigger change. But that was not to be, unfortunately. Well, he was the number four candidate before he dropped out. He was up the high at one of the Republican candidates. And people knew that we need a change. And the Democrats realized that there's a change. That's why the big crowds are not coming for Hillary Clinton and these other phony Republicans like Romney and these other guys back then or now. They came for Ron Paul, and they're coming for Trump now. The people who are truly different, independent of the money powers establishment. And so Bernie Sanders is getting a lot of support. Although he's a socialist, I like his anti-war policies. You know, I like the fact that he talks about the government being of the people, not by the big banks or corporations who fund the politicians. You know, so we'll see if Bernie Sanders wins the nomination of the Democratic Party from Hillary Clinton. But Trump has practically won the Republican nomination, and he's clearly the best choice of what's left. Even if Bernie Sanders gets the Democratic nomination, he's a socialist. Okay. Well, so, folks, I hope you get involved in the process. Talk to people about what's going on out there, folks. But, folks, don't leave it all on Trump's lap. It's up to you to take action to restore freedom for you to get your rights back now, not just wait for someone else to do it. Yes, you should talk to people. Let them know what's going on about the problems. Call Freedom Law School. We send you many of our freedom education packages to you at no charge to share with your friends, family members, co-workers. You should tell people about our website at livefreenow.org. But still, folks, get involved with Freedom Law School to help you live free now. Let you be an example of living free. Expose the fraud of the income tax. Take a stand. Expose the fraud of the Federal Reserve banking system fraud. Take a stand. Folks, the whole world owes money to the banksters. They make money out of thin air. They want the whole world borrows money from the banks. The whole world, Greeks, Spain, Italy, France, America, everywhere, are indebted to the banksters who make money out of thin air. They bought off the politicians that allowed the banksters to make money out of thin air and charge interest on all that money. Every dime of dollar in the system is money that a bank lend out to the government or the people or the companies at interest. So imagine all the dollars in the system are paying interest to the banksters. So banksters are sucking the wealth everybody out there indirectly and directly. Loans to you and loans to government who has to collect taxes to pay the banksters. If you want to see a future, if we don't do anything about it, look at Greece. Every time they bail out the Greece, folks, 90% of the money goes out to pay the banksters. All it is Germany and other, you know, France, you know, these bigger, more economically sound European countries pay the banksters off on behalf of Greece. That's all it is. And America will be going down there soon unless we wake up and take our country back. I think we have another call that joined us from area code 323. Let me see if the call from area code 323 has a question before we end this call. The call from area code 323, do you have a question? If so, give me your first name and then your question, please.
Yeah, hi, I'm Bernie, and I call from the 323 area. I guess my question is a general question about the, because you talk a lot about the filing of, you know, taxes every year, and I like the way you call it a confession form, this whole thing with the W-2s and all that. I guess my question is, I have a couple of questions, and excuse me if they sound too simple, or I don't know, you know. When you fill out a 1099 or a W-2, is that itself, you know, when you work for someone, not talking about at the end of the year filling out a tax form, just that initial form when you fill out, when you begin to work, is that acting as a confession form of some sort? Obviously, a lot of these employers, they won't hire you unless you fill out their W-2 or the 1099. Is that incriminating? Am I incriminating myself when I do something like that?
When you fill out a W-2 form at your job, Bernie, because the employer forced you into it, you could say that, but they're not giving you a choice. It's all done by force. You are not doing it voluntarily. You're doing it because the employer says, if you don't fill out the W-2 form, I will not hire you. You will not have a job. Correct?
Right.
So if
right.
you do something under force, which means under duress, you're not doing it voluntarily. You're being forced to do it. That's not a confession. If a robber comes to you on the street, points a gun to your head and says, give me your wallet. You put in your hand in your pocket, taking out your wallet and handing it to the robber. Is that considered you agreeing to what he said? Are you doing, you know, voluntarily
right.
agreeing to that? No.
Of course not.
Yeah. Of course not. You've been forced. He just put a gun to your head. Well, you got to get a job out there, and most ways to live, most people make a living by getting a job working for someone else as a worker for them, and they coerced and told these companies throughout America, forced them to have you fill out a W-4 form even though you don't want to. But I think that sometimes you can educate the employer and not fill out the W-4 form in the first place by showing the employer the law.
Right. Okay, very interesting. The other question, I've heard you mention about how the IRS can do an assessment on you. I've never had any of that, but I just want to know. And I think I've heard you mention in the past something about a 10-year limit as to when they can assess you. Am I understanding that correctly? Can you explain that timeline? Because as I understand it, let's say 10 years go by, I haven't been assessed by the IRS. That doesn't mean that they can't assess a person at any time, correctly? Or how does that timeline work?
You told me that you have not filed and paid income tax for 10 years. What do you mean by that, Bernie?
Let's say I haven't filled out any income tax, well, you know, at least 10 years or more. But IRS can assess someone. I'm trying to clarify in my mind how this whole thing with the 10-year assessment time limit, how does that apply?
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you have withholding from your paycheck these 10-plus years?
Randomly here and there. I've had different jobs. I don't have any per se job right now, but I have had jobs throughout those 10 or last 15 years where they do withhold money, correct?
Okay. Well, first of all, if you have withholding from your paycheck, that in the IRS's calculation is very simple, basic calculations, giving you no breaks for anything. You have overpaid the taxes, you paid the taxes or more, the IRS will leave you alone. They figure, hey, you've already paid plenty, and if you file, you're going to get some money back. If there's no way you're going to end up owing the IRS more than what the IRS already has from you. So they'll leave you alone for those years that you have in IRS's rude calculations. You have overpaid the tax already.
Oh,
now,
I see. So they see it. Oh.
They see it as, hey, you know, you want to leave your money here? We'll leave you alone. We're not going to come after you, say, hey, get your money back. You pay less. You overpaid. Great. You know, so if you put on your W form, you only like one allowance, for example, and you may be married or have a children or a mortgage or something else that would have reduced the amount of tax that you got to owe the IRS. IRS says, hey, if you don't come claim that in their system, that's fine with the IRS. You know, they keep your money. But if IRS believes there is an underpayment, under withholding from your paycheck, then the IRS may come after you. And the IRS, legally, technically, they can come after you forever. They can come after you 40 years from now, legally. But in practice, the IRS comes after people maybe a few years later if they come after you, maybe for 1, 2, 3, 4 years at a time. They leave you alone for a bunch of years sometimes and leave and come after you. I've seen them come after you also 5, 6, 7 years at one time. I've seen that as well. But no more than 7. I've never seen the IRS come after anybody, you know, for more than like 7 years. No, at one time. So, and so that they could come after you to assess or fix or determine the amount of tax against you. They got plenty, you know, years to do that. However, once the tax is assessed, fixed, or determined, whether you file a 1040 income tax confession form or the IRS comes after you and they assess or fix, determine amount of tax, the IRS has 10 years to collect the tax, okay, from the time that it was assessed, okay?
Right.
So that's where that 10-year that you hear, that's what that is. If you file, the IRS has generally 3 years to come after you. If you file 1040 form, but they can, in many cases, they can extend that easily to 6 years. Does that help you with your questions, my friend?
Yeah, it does clarify a few things, yeah. So I think the thing is, yeah, they collected while I was working. They're fine with that because they're saying, hey, you don't want to come for your money. Fine, we'll take it. It's almost like they're trading off. We'll leave you alone. Thanks for the money, I guess. That's what you're saying.
Say it again. No, I didn't catch that.
Seems like you're saying that while if they collect taxes from you while you're working, you're making it sound like they're keeping that money because I'm not claiming, I'm not filing taxes at the end of the year. So they're seeing it as money in their pocket.
Well, they just say, hey, you abandoned the money in their eyes. You abandoned the money, so we'll just keep it.
Right.
You know, that's their attitude.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay, I appreciate that.
You're welcome, my friend. Thank you for your questions, Bernie.
All right,
okay, folks, it's been a pleasure to be on this call with you guys. I'll be here next Thursday, May 12th, again with you. And we'll be talking more, folks, about putting the IRS on trial. Tell people it's coming up. June 6, 2016, for that next week or two. Okay, it's in Oakland, California. We are going to put more information about it on Freedom Law School's website at livefreenow.org, and we're going to give you more information about it on Freedom Law School's weekly commerce calls. Thank you for being with me, folks. Have a good night, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Good night.